to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today and sitting in for our regular host, Juanita Watson. Today, I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Eric Mattingly. He's the author of Skinquake, a fictional account of class, race, and ethnicity. Our conversation today is going to be really interesting because it's going to take us into racial ailments, to politics, obvious distinctions, ancient wisdom, racial disharmony, and so much more, so do stay tuned. This is going to be an interesting one. But first, a little bit about Eric. Eric Mattingly walks two worlds, the scientific, technological, and the metaphysical. He enjoys writing everything from poetry to short stories and novels. Skinquake, the novel that we're going to be talking about today, is his first one, but he says it's not his last. However, it is a standalone, and he also has the seven-book series in the works. So, again, as I say, stay tuned. This is going to be an interesting one. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
I'm glad to have you on the phone. Gosh, before we get into some stuff that's really relevant in the society now, I want to give the listening audience a little backstory of your book, Skinquake, so that we can set them up into what we're going to be talking about.
It's kind of a modern fantasy. It's kind of about a guy who kind of falls through the rabbit hole. And you wind up understanding that it all has a purpose to kind of sort of help him understand himself. This is a guy with a lot of different genetic makeup in him, cultural makeup, family background, and he's always trying to fit into a particular one, a particular race, a particular culture, and never really quite makes it. So a lot of bizarre things happen to him to understand that. I wrote this story because I ran across some teachings and some traditional and ancient texts that I read about that spoke about race in ways that you never hear these days. And I thought, wow, this would be a great story to tell.
Yeah, well, gosh, tell us, what isn't talked about these days that you did find in the ancient wisdom?
Well, I don't want to give away too much of the book, but let's just say that I ran across some stuff in kind of a modern prophet's stuff from the 30s, Edgar Cayce, if anybody's heard of that, that person, and he spoke about race in ancient times as being a little quite a bit different than how we view it today. Essentially, the big difference is that we're in the habit these days of considering that everybody comes from one set of parents, I guess you'd say, and any differences that we call racial are environmentally created. And he spoke quite differently about that, and I thought that was kind of interesting. And then a few years later, I ran across a traditional Cherokee story that talks in detail about the history of the races, and there was a lot of correlation there. And then I wound up finding other correlations in other texts. And it was just kind of overwhelming, kind of so different from how we view things. And I thought, wow, this could make a great story.
And obviously it did, as you were talking about the our genetics and so on. And there is a belief that basically there is only 6 degrees of separation between us all. And it almost sounds like, from what your teachings are, what you've read, that it's not so. Edgar Cayce certainly was ahead of his time at the time that he was alive and gave us all his wisdom. So are you interested in metaphysics then? Is that how you got into the teachings of Edgar Cayce?
Yeah, I'm very interested in it. It's kind of the backdrop for anything that I've done or will do.
Well, it's certainly a great concept, and I think that once we do understand some of this ancient wisdom, it all makes sense to us. So I do want to talk about the premise in your book, and it's to do with race. And your character, you said that he had a multicultural background and different races. So what actually was going on within him because of that?
Well, what happens is, an example I gave in another interview earlier was compared to Tiger Woods. A nice modern example. And I don't know, obviously, I don't know him, and I don't know what his personal struggles are, but But you see, there was for a long time there, you know, he got famous, and then what race is this guy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he was called black for a long time, and then he's got this long answer now, and I don't even know what his current one is, but obviously he's a mixed mixed heritage, and he may handle it gracefully, you know, I don't know. But I've definitely met people before who are of mixed race, and they're fine with it, but they also kind of get tired of being asked which one they are, and I sort of just toyed with the idea of maybe it's annoying to these people because maybe it's kind of hard for them because they're trying to fit into a particular one. And so I just sort of took that to the extreme with this Randy character.
Have you actually talked to people, you know, outside the fictional character, but to actual people that are of mixed race?
Yeah. I'm actually in a biracial marriage, I guess you would call it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of funny to say that because, you know, it's just my wife. But,
right.
But relatives further out in her family are of mixed race.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, I've got situations where people grew up on a reservation who are half Native and half not. I grew up in the Midwest, and I knew people who were, you know, half black and half white. And I sense some, you know, as a child, it's definitely some confusion sometimes on them, like, you know, who they want to be. Do they have to make a choice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And none of this, of course, is to say you have to make a choice, but just, as, you know, the issues that people can have about trying to express themselves in an ethical way, ethnic way.
Yeah, I can well imagine. I don't know myself personally because I'm not of mixed race. I'm of mixed heritages, but I'm one color, so it's hard, I think, for us that aren't involved or, you know, directly involved in a mixed race relationship or as you are or, you know, being mixed race for us to really understand as to really what goes on. Now, of course, things have really turned around, too, because we have an African-American president. And how does that fit in, do you feel?
Well, it's funny because that's actually how I wound up actually putting the book out.
Uh-huh.
I shelved this thing for a few years, and then when Barack ran for president and then won, all of the racial issues that sort of crawled out of the woodwork during the campaign and still was sort of a wake-up call to me that, yeah, these aren't really over yet. It seemed, you know, I noticed in society, at least in the U.S. here, that in, you know, mainstream culture, the topic of race sort of kind of ebbs and flows. And to me, it was kind of quiet for a long time. And then when he ran and won and still, since he's been in, it's, wow, that, you know, the race topic is up all the time.
Yeah,
and I thought, wow, this is, you know, maybe I should get this story out there because it's really kind of an interesting way to look at life.
Well, it's certainly timely, and what I'm noticing, too, that the tables have shifted, and it seems to me that there's more acceptance of, let's say, African-Americans, but yet it seems that there are some that are really, those that are against the race are really coming out, too, so there's just like, it's both are escalating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you feel about the Arizona new law that's coming into effect? Or is in effect, I guess, I should say. And that, of course, is racial profiling, isn't it?
It leads to it, yeah. And I live in Arizona, so it's pretty up close.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think that the law is entirely racist-based, but what it does do is, you know, it's obviously, since it's putting police and enforcers on the edge of determining who is suspicious. Well, that brings up a whole bunch of questions.
Of course it does.
Yeah, how are you defining suspicion?
Visible minorities, you know, we're human, and there's part of us that will notice the visible minority, and then we start questioning. And so, personally, I just think it's really unfair to put that position onto someone. But you're in Arizona, you said, and you're in Phoenix. Are you finding that this is an issue in Phoenix?
It's a major issue.
Is it?
You've got people here. You know, you think about the Mexican American or Hispanic or whatever you want to call. That culture has been here as long or longer than the mainstream culture. And here's a law that could lead to some of them being checked for their identity.
Yeah.
You know, for being here. And again, I don't think that it's a mass movement of racism. I think that the people who are worried about it are correct in the sense that it's just something that it's a law that's formulating kind of begging for a racist problem,
which is really unfortunate. That's for sure. So there's a lot of stereotyping that goes on with race, and I would like you to talk a little bit about that and what you have found in your research when you were writing your book as to, you know, what really happens to stereotypes.
There's always the ugly stereotypes. You know, people unfortunately tend to, when they're insecure or whatever their background is, will tend to find ways to categorize someone else in a way that makes them less than themselves. And we all know there's the bad stereotypes of every race. What fascinates me, though, is that I think we often forget that there are some commonalities in different cultures that are the same race. For instance, if you look at the white cultures, by and large, you know, let's say it centers around Europe. You know, nowadays there's the U.S., but we're pretty much European North Americans.
Right.
And, you know, most European nations, they have their peculiarities or whatever, but historically, there's some commonalities. You know, they like the royalty. For a long time, there was the imperialism. Most European countries were involved in that. There's things you can point at. And obviously, very white skin to bring it right to your race. And you can see this in other cultures. You know, you look at Asians. Well, not all Asians have different shaped eyes, but by and large, most of them do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we're in the habit of saying, you know, we're all one, and we are, of course, we're all human beings. And stereotypes, it's a good thing to drop a lot of them. The other side of that, though, is to sort of acknowledge, you know, actually we're kind of maybe coming from different places, and what's that about?
Well, definitely, and of course that culture then comes into effect, too, because each race has their own culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we sometimes look at other cultures and it's like, whoa, what are they doing? But yet it's something that's really common and within their own culture. For instance, you know, hand gestures is one.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, you need to, when you're traveling into other countries, you need to really be aware of what hand gestures mean, because what they mean here in the U.S., let's say, or Canada, means something totally different in other countries.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
So,
yes. I had one happen, actually had another example recently.
Uh-huh.
I was at my my day job, which is kind of a cubicle environment, I finally realized something that was odd. I'm kind of a little bit of a shy person normally, but not terribly shy.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very open, low-walled environment. I realized that I had picked up a habit from my wife's family, in a way, of when you walk around and you're around other people, I tend to not look at them as often as other people. I'm just going to say white people.
Right. The icon.
I pretty much look ahead, or I look down until I'm ready to talk to them, or I know they're being, you know, they want my attention, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that was being misinterpreted by some people,
yeah,
as being aloof or distant, and or even rude.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was the opposite. I was being respectful, and I realized that this is, I don't know if I picked it up from my wife's family or, mm-hmm, or I think it's actually my habit, but I noticed that when I married my wife, I noticed that it's very common in Native cultures that you don't necessarily are in people's face all the time. You don't jump up and say hi everybody you pass. It's very common that you don't do that across Native tribes. And I just sort of put that together. It was kind of interesting to see that. That's a good example, like the hand gestures. Of
exactly.
People are coming from a very different place on the very same action.
Exactly.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. We're speaking today with Eric Mattingly. As you have heard so far, Eric is open to talk about racial components to our society, his personal experiences, and our common ground. You're talking about Native American, and it's interesting that when I started doing genealogy, and in my husband's side of the family, I found out that there was Cherokee and Osage. But the interesting part was that the family, the generations back, were really in denial, and it was a big family secret, and they didn't want to talk about it. But now, gosh, you know, if you do have some American Indian blood in you, it's an honor.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting how that turns, too, over the generations. And, 100 years ago, nobody wanted to talk about it. It was, you just didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that story so many times, too, from many people that I've known. Very similar story with, for a long time it was this dark secret.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's a badge of pride or something.
Well, it's interesting because our daughter looks very American Indian, and she doesn't look like any of us. And it's like, what happened? I didn't think they got mixed her up in the hospital or something. And she said, kept saying to me that she was American Indian. And it's like, well, I don't think so. No, but of course, then when I started looking into the genealogy and history and found out, of course, and then I got a hold of a picture of her fourth great grandmother, and my goodness, the identical look. And it's like, yeah. So this is a real honor for her to look like her great grandmother and be that Native American. So there's a lot of popularity with DNA right now. It seems like, and there again with genealogy, I'm doing genealogy, and it's like everybody's being DNA tested, and, what do you think of all that?
Well, I think that it's a natural outgrowth. As soon as the technology was made available to individuals who weren't wealthy or who weren't an institution, I think people jumped on it because I think that we've, I think it's normal to be curious about your past in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to look at their genetic past. But what I find interesting is that the popularity of looking into one's DNA runs a little bit counter to what the predominant message is, that people just say, well, we're all one and we're just a whole, we're just this big mix and we're going to keep on mixing and let's just move on. That's kind of what I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
That was the tendency of, either you were racist or it was that. It was nothing in between. And so this DNA thing is fascinating to me, how many people are doing it. You can do it through National Geographic.
Yeah.
And the popularity of it just kind of speaks of a different curiosity than what we're kind of in the habit of saying about race and culture.
Mm-hmm. Eric, you had mentioned that your wife is Native American. And is she visibly Native American looking?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Okay. So do you find that you as a Caucasian and her as an American Indian, do you find that, and being in, let's say, a mixed marriage, so do you find that people actually take a second look at you? Is that noticeable to you?
It's less noticeable in the Southwest.
Yeah.
Where I live, because natives are all over the place here.
Right, yeah.
I have two situations where sometimes it's a lot more noticeable, and that is some reservations where I've gone or extended family on her side. I get everything from kind of suspicious looks to just sort of curious looks.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say, I'm not talking about people who've never seen white people. I'm just saying that it's a double take.
Yeah.
A bit. And curiosity, and it's fine. I never have any bad experience. The other side is actually, I ran into it just months ago. My father died, and I went back when I was at the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the Midwest. I had a guy I grew up with I hadn't seen in many, many years. Long before I met my wife, and I'd introduce him, and we talked for a while, and he just He's a great guy. He just finally came out. He couldn't hold it back. He's talking to my wife and saying, "So, do you mind me asking, like, so what are you?" And I actually kind of admired that about him because I was fascinated growing up with how many people are thinking that way but don't say it.
Right.
And the funny things they do. Dead. So it's kind of neat that he just said it out loud. She didn't care.
That's great that some people are able to do that, but I imagine that there are a lot of them that don't, and they just think about it, and, the reactions are then physical. So do you have children?
No. No children.
No children.
Just a dog.
Oh, a dog. Okay. Is a multi-race, too?
Yeah.
Oh, God. So there seems to be, this harmony that we were just talking about. Do you think that this is going to change?
Which part? The racist?
The racial, cultural, and particularly the race, because it's been around for so long. And, there is this harmony. And as we talked earlier, that with President Obama being, multi-race, now is our president, but yet there's people that are, for it, against it, and there's just a lot of buzz going on. And so, that's kind of a disharmony. Do you think that will change eventually?
I have hope that it will change eventually. I think that, and one reason I wrote the book is kind of a firm belief that the change is only going to happen when we move to the next stage on thinking about race and culture. And before I describe that, let me say how I see the stage we've been in for a while. In the old days, there was just abject racism, let's just say. Not across the board, across the planet, but, let's just say racism was worse 300 years ago or whatever. The stage I grew up in, and probably before I was born, and even currently, I think we're in and towards the end of, is where you look for only the things you have in common and kind of embrace those and try to help that carry you through. For instance, we all bleed red, whatever. Mm-hmm. We all suffer. We all have love and pain. We're all human beings. But look for those common things. For instance, to bring it back to the Obama election, I'm sure Harry Reid is probably a pretty liberal thinker, but, it came out early on that that he had given an early, he already said Obama would have a chance of winning because he doesn't speak, he doesn't use Ebonics.
Right.
I'm not even really criticizing that. There's some truth to that, and the reason there's some truth to that is because we still look for things that are like us, and we try to embrace that. And I think that's a great step. I think that we will never really, though, have racial harmony until we realize what others are actually bringing to the table that's useful to us, that's not the same. And I think that when that's more widespread than it is, then we'll have the next stage will be that we'll all get along fine. But I think that we're missing that other step where you appreciate the differences, not just in a cute way, like, oh, you have neat food, and I like your ethnic food.
Right.
But really, what is this behind your culture, and maybe I'm missing something, And that,
and I'm not sure it's going to happen in my lifetime, that is for sure, but I sure hope it does. I want to go back to some of the studies that you've done with Edgar Cayce's work. Is there any prediction in that wisdom that there is going to be a change in it and an acceptance?
That's a good question. I haven't looked at that particular part for a while, but I believe so in the sense there's definitely predictions, as there is in many prophets and traditions, that someday we will all be in a better place, emotionally, spiritually, mentally. Even physically, and I believe that his would fall into that too. I don't remember speaking to race directly in that way, but I think, from what I can tell, and this is from a genuine belief in the value that all cultures have to offer each other, that it will happen. Because when we start realizing the gifts that others are bringing, we would have no choice really but to kind of evolve and grow.
Exactly, and that's basically what. The bottom line of all that wisdom, the ancient wisdom that is being passed down. So, Eric, 2012, do you think that when the shift happens, as some people do predict, that the consciousness of the people is going to shift, they're either going to go one way or the other, do you think that our culture will accept race more so
in 2012 and forward.
I confess I don't know a whole lot about the significance of that, other than it's the end of the Mayan calendar as written, and I don't know about dates in general.
Yeah.
As far as when changes happen, I do feel like a change is happening, and that probably in our all but the oldest of us, our lifetimes, we'll probably see a lot more big changes. When exactly that is, I don't know, but I think it's happening. I really do. I think it's happening already. I see everything we've been talking about as being part of it. I guess I can say that.
Well, that's, you know, a lot of the people that have done research in the shift that's going to happen in 2012 certainly say that all as well. So it'll be interesting to see what is really going to happen. I'm looking forward to that. So, gosh, Eric, this has been a really interesting conversation. And listeners, I just want to remind you that we're talking to Eric Mattingly. He is the author of Skinquake. It's a fictional novel, fantasy, literary type of novel. But it's really current and addresses current time. And so I just really encourage you to check it out. And Eric, tell us your website address.
My website is www.betweensanities.com. That's sanity, plural.
Okay, betweensanities.com. Eric, is there something that you'd like to say to our listening audience before we close?
Thanks for spending a little time. I hope you buy my book. If you do, you'll have quite an adventure. And I think it'll help us all move along on the grand adventure I think we've been on for a long time. And it just keeps on going.
Oh, you know, well said, grand adventure. And that's a great way to look at life. This is an adventure, and we need to take the time to really enjoy it and just go in within and just see what we're all about. So, gosh, thanks again, Eric. I'm really grateful that you had the time to talk to us. And listeners, this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Do come back and listen to other interviews, and certainly do check out Eric's book, Skinquake, and his address, website address. Go ahead and tell me that again, please.
www.betweensanities.com.
Thanks for listening. Bye for now.